Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Discover hundreds of unforgettable destinations with expert local guides.
But first this morning, Dublin-born stand-up comedian Mary Burke lives and works in the UK. She's a regular at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and the Backyard Comedy Club in London. Well, Mary has a new five-part radio documentary series coming to BBC Sounds, and it's called Mary Burke, Who Cares? Mary, good morning to you.
Hello.
Lovely to speak to you. Listen, we'll find out why that title is so fitting in just a moment. But I thought listeners might like to hear you in action first. Here's a taste of your stand-up.
If you've never seen Grand Designs, let me explain to you. You've got a very smug couple. We've had to remortgage the summer house in Tuscany to pay for the refurb of the 17th century windmill. A lot of pressure, we can all empathise. Now, every episode is exactly the same. They run out of money, it's a really bad winter, they end up living in a caravan. And just when things are their absolute worst, Kevin McLeod, the presenter, pays a visit to the wife slash project manager. And he gives her a bit of an out pep talk, just to cheer her up. And then a month later, the wife slash project manager finds out she's pregnant. Coincidence?
I love that, Mary. Listen, first of all, how did you end up in the UK and where did you grow up? Did you grow up here in Dublin?
I grew up in Terenure in Dublin, yeah. And then I left, I went to the States for a bit and then I moved to London. And that's where I've been here for about maybe 20, 30 years now.
And did you do comedy before you left here, or was it something you just decided to focus on when you got there, Mary?
I did a comedy course in London and then I started here and I've done most of my comedy work here.
And how did you get into it? I mean, what kind of gigs do you do?
I just work the circuit. I work everywhere. Like, for instance, this year I was on tour in Australia doing the Fringe festivals in Australia. And then I just do Fringe festivals all over the world. So you'll just take like an hour long show of comedy and just kind of tour it around the world or around the UK.
Is it terrifying, Mary?
No, it's not terrifying. You get so desensitized, I think, that it's like any job. It's like being a surgeon. I mean, surgeons don't get frightened every time they do an operation, I would assume.
Yeah.
It just becomes a bit, not mundane, but like, do you know that if you've seen variations of everything, you're not really surprised anymore? I can usually know how to handle a situation. I rarely ever get frightened. I did get a bit scared at Glastonbury because that was a bit of a strange gig because you're in a tent and there's a lot of outside music and sound. But normally that's the last time I remember being actually nervous.
And you mentioned you've just, you know, been in Australia. Are Australian audiences, like, are they different to either Irish audiences or UK audiences? Or do you just do your comedy the same way?
I was in Perth and I think most of Dublin appears to have moved to Perth at this rate. There was just tons of Irish doctors and nurses at the gigs. And they felt to me like, it's really weird, like, in the Australian cities, some of them feel very Irish and some of them don't. So Perth feels very Irish. Melbourne feels very Irish. Adelaide, not at all. And then I found out that it was settled by Germans. And I thought, oh, that probably explains why it doesn't feel familiar to me. And New Zealand didn't feel, New Zealand just felt very reserved.
Now, look, this series looks very, very good. Have you done much TV and radio work before this? Or is it primarily stand-up you do, Mary?
It's primarily stand-up I do, and then this originally started as a Fringe show in Edinburgh, and then I pitched it to a production company and then they took it to Radio 4.
This series is called Who Cares? It's about another huge part of your own life with your husband Simon, also a comedian. Tell me about him and your life before he got ill.
Well, before we were both stand-up comics and we used to tour together all the time. Not like in a double act, but we would just always be gigging together. And then during the lockdown, he had a massive stroke that almost killed him. And then that meant he was paralyzed completely down his left side. And also his memory and his mental faculties were also slightly affected too, which means that he obviously can never do stand-up again. But and it also happened during lockdown as well, which made it even worse.
I can't even begin to imagine how difficult that must have been, actually.
Yeah, you just you, your life just kind of jog along. All of a sudden, your life can just get pulled out from under you in an instant. You know, you're happily jogging along, everything's familiar, and all of a sudden, yeah, it's all gone, it's all vanished. Whatever future I thought I had, it completely changed in just one morning. You know.
And he's like yourself, he's a relatively young man for this to happen to him, Mary.
He was very young, and they had to have he had a hemorrhagic stroke, and it was really, really serious. It's one of the most, it's very rare and it's very, very serious. And because he was only like 47 at the time, sometimes they have to make a decision whether or not it's worth their while operating. And so because he was that much younger, they decided to go ahead with the operation. But it was very, very, he was in the ICU for 6 weeks. It was a very long time for him to be in there, you know. But we're very lucky. I mean, he was at the John Radcliffe and the care was amazing. But yeah, he was very young, and he was the youngest man in the stroke ward as well.
Was he in a coma then for a while as well?
They put him in an induced coma, and he was in a coma for like a long time. And then they weren't sure, because the thing about the brain is they don't actually know what's going on in there. They can give you like a guess, but they can't actually predict themselves, because every recovery is completely different. And so they weren't sure. So he was in an induced coma for about maybe 2 weeks. And then they slowly took him out. And then they realized that he could actually breathe on his own. And the brain damage wasn't as extensive as they thought. And then they showed me the scan. And they said, our prediction is, and it turned out to be right, that his left side was complete, would be, you could see this massive big white blob on that side of the brain, which meant that that left side would never recover function. He would just be completely paralyzed on his left side. But his speech at least wasn't affected. So at least that was something.
And I know you were there, weren't you, Mary, by his side when he came out of the coma that time?
I did, yeah. Because I used to go in, and because it was during lockdown, they kept on saying to me, like, well, we need to prepare you for the fact that he probably has some severe mental damage. And I thought, like, he would notice when I came in, and he would kind of squeeze my hand and things like that. But then there's a bit in, I do a whole story in the show about a thing that happened. It's kind of exaggerated for comedic effect, but in real life, he did actually make a joke when he kind of came out of his coma. And I thought, oh, he's going to be okay. His brain is still in there, still intact. So at least his personality is still there. Like, his body is not as it was, but his brain, his personality is still there. He's really been stoic about the whole thing. Of all the people, I used to go into the stroke ward, and it was full of very angry, bitter men. But he was always very accepting. He just said, it's happened, and we just have to get on with it and do the best we can. And he's just always been, I think people have an innate personality setting. So I think whatever happens to people, it just reverts to what their personality setting has always been.
And despite his left side, Mary, I mean, he can still do an awful lot. He understands absolutely everything, doesn't he? I mean, I suppose, what can he not do?
Let me see. He's got the use of his right side, so he can use. The problem is that because he has to be like manually taken in and out of his bed, put into a wheelchair, he can still use his right side. His speech is fine, and his memory's actually better than mine, actually, to be honest. But it's how people relate to him I found really surprising. Once he went into a wheelchair, I couldn't believe how people talk to him when he's in a wheelchair. I didn't really think that went on.
Like what?
People talk to him like he's a child. They just assume he's got some sort of learning difficulties, and they always talk to me, and they never talk to him. And they talk very slowly to him as well, which just drives me off the deep end. I can't bear it. They have what I call the wheelchair boys. It's just really odd that when you're out with someone, and then they'll just direct the whole conversation goes to me. I mean, I realize obviously he's at a lower level than me. Like, he's actually sitting down much lower. But it's still, when someone talks to your husband as though they were a child, it's always a bit shocking, you know. That kind of forced tone that you do when you're talking to a child, you know, that kind of very bright, jolly tone.
And in this documentary series you've made for the BBC, it's actually fascinating. You delve into the lives of carers. Who did you speak to, and why did you want to do this?
I did realize that I thought the easiest way to get people to be interested in the lives, I didn't realize a lot of my fellow comedians were also carers until I became a carer myself. And then I started talking about it on stage. And women, because it's primarily women who are carers, they would come up to me afterwards and they'd chat to me and say, oh, I'm so glad someone's talking about this on stage. And then as I began to talk about on stage, other comedians would say to me, oh, you know, I take care of, my mother's got dementia, or there would always be someone who had some sort of connection to caring. And then I thought, would it be great if we had a show where we did some stand-up comedy about being a carer and also talked about our lives as being a carer? Because that's easier a way for people to access the stories. Because otherwise, once people hear it's about carers, they just kind of switch off. It just sounds really grim and depressing. But if you kind of marry it with comedy and also the story, it's easier to get the point over.
And you managed to find the humour in it. I mean, it's tough being a carer. I think it's preparing for this, Mary. I read that, you know, 1 in 8 people are some kind of a carer or a family carer. So many people listening to you this morning will totally identify with what you're talking about. But it is rough being a carer, but you managed to find the fun in it too.
Well, some of the stories, I mean, some of the stand-up routines that the other comics did are just so funny. I mean, Josephine Lacey's routine, her son is autistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just the routine she does this wonderful show called Autism Mama, about dealing with a teenage son who's about to enter puberty, who's also autistic. It's just a wonderfully funny, sensitive show. I thought it was amazing.
Do you think it makes it easier in a way, being a carer, if you can also manage to see the funny side of it and do something like you're doing here, do a series about it, do shows about it, talk about it?
I think you have to see the funny side of it. Otherwise, what else is there? You know, it's like I can't sit at home and think about what might have been. Because what you find yourself doing in the beginning is just fighting reality. And you're constantly going, it's not fair, it's not fair. Why him? Why me? And the answer is, well, why not you? Why not him? Mm. It's all so random. And the best thing we can do is just laugh at it, really. What else is there, you know?
You have it in your DNA, though. I love it. Tell me about your granny in Ballina. She lived a long time. And when she was asked about why or how she lived so long.
Yeah, she said she lived to 103 because God was punishing her. And I thought, that's such a male thing to say.
Was she a funny person?
She was very funny, yeah. But there's a very dark, you know, this kind of, I want to call them battle axes, but there's a generation of women who've had very hard lives. They're just very funny, no nonsense types, but very, very funny. You know, she's very stoic.
Do you engage with the politics of caring at all? I mean, do you see yourself as a spokesperson for carers, and can you push for change? Because obviously there are real issues that need change, but do you see yourself in that role almost?
I don't really see myself in that role at all. If I can just bring awareness to the fact, until I became a carer myself, I didn't realize there's like an army of people who are carers. And because they're women, they're just this kind of silent army of women who are just completely ignored. I remember, I think in the series, somebody said, if the government realized how much money we save them, you think they'd be kinder to us?
Did you find it easier in a way to accept what had happened to you both when you heard the other stories of people maybe that you weren't aware of, many of us wouldn't have been aware of? Does that help when you hear other people's stories or not?
Oh my God, some of the stories are way worse than mine, you know? And at least the hardest thing in the beginning for me was that there was a really, I'm not going to say I'm a saint because I wasn't completely accepting in the beginning, because it was a period when my husband, because it's brain damage, your personality changes. And so for about maybe a year after he was recovering, his personality completely changed. I called it the Captain Picard phase, where he would just bark orders at me all the time. What happens is that you become egocentric like a toddler. And so the empathy part of your brain is damaged. And that was very disconcerting because I thought, who am I married to? He's so grumpy and bad-tempered. And then gradually over the year, he gradually came back to himself. But that period of time was very, very difficult because I could handle a physical disability. But if you're married to a stranger, that's really disconcerting.
But it's lovely he came back to himself, Mary, eventually.
He did. And I'm so glad he did, because I thought, I can't cope with this, the barking of the orders and the get me this and the get me that. And the he gradually, and his speech got better. Obviously, speech got better over that year, because it was very, very slow, because you can kind of, his brain is kind of making the words in his head and slowly coming out his mouth. But then he gradually came back to himself.
And how are you now? I mean, in a sense, you're making a series about carers because there's so many people doing that. How are you on a daily basis? Who cares for you?
Who cares for me? I care for me. That's it. I think you have to be so self-reliant. Mm. And I remember someone saying to me, and this is a very sin, well, it depends what way you want to put it. Someone said to me, people will disappoint you and delight you in equal measure. That I found that to be case. A lot of people have really stepped up and been brilliant. And some people, it depends where you want to put your focus. Some people really disappointed me and just kind of vanished and just kind of melted away, you know.
Yeah.
That's just how life is.
Well, you're fascinating, Mary. Are you coming to Dublin anytime soon to do any gigs that we can go and watch you?
I did the Dunleary Comedy Festival. I might be back in August, actually. I might try and come over and do some gigs in Dublin, maybe do about 4 or 5 of them over the weekend or something.
Great. Well, if you do, I'll definitely be there. Listen, Mary Burke, spelled O-U-R-K-E, thanks for speaking to me this morning. And your series on BBC Sounds, it's called Mary Burke, Who Cares? And Irish audiences can find you on Instagram. Your Instagram is brilliant. And on YouTube, at Mary Burke Comic. Mary, thanks so much for chatting to me this morning. The best of luck to you both.
Thanks, Dad. Okay, bye.